we now have this new tool, AI, and there's a lot of people who just haven't started to embrace it. So I go work with companies, I work with students, and you can teach them the basics of how to use it, but they have to change how they think about it.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. And boy, do I have a story for you with some real twists and turns. Everything about this episode, from why we're covering the topic at all, to where the research led us, to how my personal feelings have changed just in the few weeks we've been working on this, everything has surprised me. And for that reason, I need to take you back to the beginning. So if you will, please come backstage on The Lisa Show for a moment and let me tell you how this whole thing started. Over the last year of the podcast, we've ended up talking about ADHD quite a bit, and not always on purpose. Our episode topic will be one thing, and then a guest will say, oh, by the way, I have ADHD, and this is how it ties into et cetera, et cetera. Is this a coincidence? Is this because all my friends are creatives? Is the universe trying to tell me something? I don't know. But you, who listened, have really responded to that topic. And so, of course, I said, we need to do more stuff on ADHD. Let's find some experts. And my producers and I started doing the research. And then things got weird. We found this book tailored to parents all about raising kids with ADHD. It was full of great tips. It had amazing reviews on Amazon, and the author had solid credentials, so we reached out, or tried to reach out. And this was the problem. We couldn't find her. We searched her name. It didn't pop up anywhere. We tried her publishing company. Same thing. No website, no business by that name, nothing. We even reverse image searched her picture. No results. That picture and that face existed in only one place on the internet, and that place was the back of the book. Now, this was unusual, but not the most unusual thing possible. I mean, maybe she was writing under a pseudonym, or maybe we just couldn't find her. Was it likely? No. Have you seen how hard authors have to work today? They are hustling. They have websites and Instagrams, and if they're lucky, publicists or agents helping them boost their internet presence. Authors aren't hard to find. They're usually shouting, hey, I'm over here, at the top of their virtual lungs. But still, maybe this author was just a lone wolf who didn't need all of that. Except then it got weirder. In Amazon's More Like This, you know, the part of the page where it recommends similar stuff to what you're looking at, we saw more books. The covers and titles looked nearly identical to the one we were looking at, all aimed towards parents, all about topics related to mental health and neurodivergence. And all of them, we discovered, with vague author bios, generic pictures, and pen names that didn't come up in any internet search or even on social media. But then we did get one hit. It was a TikTok video where a content creator was telling his subscribers that they were missing out if they weren't using ChatGPT to generate books to sell on Amazon. He pulled up a page that estimated revenue for doing this. Not a private dashboard, just a public page which showed a ballpark income based on Amazon sales of different books. And one of the examples he shared was the first book we found, the book on parenting kids with ADHD. And by the way, if the estimates are accurate, that book is earning its creator thousands of dollars a month. Now, this is the first time we've run into something like this while researching The Lisa Show that we know of. And to say it creeped me out is a bit of an understatement. I'm a parent of kids with ADHD. If I was a younger mom, I'd absolutely be on Amazon spending money I barely had on books that I hoped could give me resources, trusting that the experts knew something I didn't. So the fact that anyone can now easily impersonate an expert using AI to write a book, and that there's a huge financial incentive to do so, that feels so unethical to me. Not just because the information could be wrong, which, to be fair, it may not be. According to the reviews, people are getting a lot out of these books, but because of the lie. These books say they were written by parents, educators, doctors, and mental health professionals with years of experience working with children. That's why you trust them. That's why you spend the money. That's why you choose a book over just asking ChatGPT. So I have a problem with that. And I should tell you that I've already had some misgivings about AI. My newsfeed is full of people talking about the environmental impact of AI. And there's a big debate going on about whether or not it was stealing when AI companies used human artists' work, from authors to illustrators to musicians, in order to train tools like ChatGPT so that it could create similar work. And I feel the fear in my community that generative AI is going to devalue creative work altogether. Meanwhile, my kids are sending me videos of newscasters that look totally convincing and aren't real. Gmail keeps offering to write emails for me. I can't remember turning that feature on. And the other day, I was going through a customer support chat for a piece of software I use at work, and the agent I was speaking to insisted that I should be able to use a feature which, as it turns out, does not exist. And it was an AI chatbot all along, which is why this Amazon thing with the books felt like a nail in the coffin. What is the world we live in? What does it all mean? Who can you really even trust these days? Does the human brain even know what creativity is? And do we even matter? Are we already in the matrix? I don't know. Yada, yada, yada. So my producers and I changed gears and started looking for an expert on AI to come and talk about its evils and confirm all of my fears about the death of creativity and tell us how to survive in these brave new sci-fi times. Kidding. What we actually did was find an expert, David Wood, who wrote a book called Rewiring Your Mind for AI: How to Think, Work, and Thrive in the Age of Intelligence. And that's the heart of the message he shared with me. How you can make AI work for you, how you can help teach the younger generation to use it in ethical ways, and how to have peace about the whole thing. And some of the things he said challenged me so much that it sent me on a journey that actually changed me and led to some surprising emotional results. I'll tell you that story in a moment. But first, meet David Wood.
So my name's David Wood. I'm a professor here at BYU. I've been here 17 years. It goes really, really quick. I've been in the accounting space, but really technology. And with AI coming out, that has just kind of changed everything I do, from teaching to research to working with companies. It's just been a fascinating and fun journey.
Yeah, what a time to study technology. So in layman's terms, what is considered AI?
Anytime you try to get a computer to act like a human, that's AI. And you think of it as a spectrum. So from very basic, a calculator, you could say, is trying to emulate what a human does.
Oh, I had never thought of it that way.
And most people wouldn't. So yeah. Most are not going to say a calculator's AI, but the idea of trying to emulate a human, all the way up to the things they can do now, driverless cars that can take you for a stroll and completely do everything that a normal taxi driver would do. And so there's this new release thing called generative AI. That's ChatGPT, Gemini, Anthropic. Those are the companies. And the idea here is it's different in that it's generating something completely new. And so one of the first misconceptions, a lot of people use computers and you're used to these deterministic answers. You plug something in, you always get the same result back. Mm-hmm. That's not generative AI. It's not Google. It's not looking something up, but it's creating and inventing something new every time you use it.
Creating something new, that's a defining feature of AI-powered tools like ChatGPT. It's not like the old Google from 2001, where most of us got our internet search training. Remember that? You had to guess the right combination of words to get the most relevant list of sources back while avoiding full sentences. Artificial intelligence tools are conversational, and they do their own thinking. And so for people like us who are old enough to remember rotary phones and 8-tracks, or even, now this will make you feel old, an iPod Shuffle, welcome to the club. We're all dinosaurs here. We have a learning curve with AI, not just for how to use it, but when and why to use it.
So my mother-in-law, wonderful woman, she'll call my wife with some question like, what time does the BYU football game start? And my wife's like, Mom, Google it.
Yeah.
And she just didn't grow up with Google, and so it was not part of her life.
It's hard to change your habits.
That's exactly it. And so that whole idea of we now have this new tool, AI, and there's a lot of people who just haven't started to embrace it. So I go work with companies, I work with students, and you can teach them the basics of how to use it, but they have to change how they think about it. Now that we have this incredibly powerful tool at our fingertips.
Okay, so what mindsets or assumptions do we have already right now regarding AI that we might need to shift? I'm sure I have all of them. I'm really like resistant to this.
This is not a good or bad thing.
So explain a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so people, you hear the news and it sensationalizes one of the other two ways. It's going to say, oh, AI is going to be everything, it's going to do everything, or it's terrible, it's evil, it's the end of the world.
It's the death of creativity.
Exactly.
You can hear my bias in
yes.
my voice.
Yes, and neither of those are fully true. It's a tool that you can learn to use to enhance what you're doing or to do things worse. So you can use it for both things. And let me start with a student example. So you bring a student into the classroom, and you've seen it with kids. When they do a homework problem, they can copy and paste it, put it into Google, and look up an answer.
Yep.
They're not learning. They're just cheating. Mm-hmm. They're minimizing work. AI does that, but 10 times better than Google. All right, so that's the bad side. Now, the good side is, you know, my son's studying AP chemistry, and I can't help him. I have no clue on how to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. So what is he supposed to do? Well, he could try to find it on Google, but he can actually go into ChatGPT and use it as a tutor. So say, I don't understand this. Explain it. Give me another example. Help me think of it in a different way. Teach me how to remember this. And so now, instead of using it to do work minimization, you can start using these tools to enhance what you are already doing. And I think that's one of the big mindsets, is you don't want to fall into the trap that AI is evil or that AI solves all the problems. It's here's what AI does well, and here's how I can use it to enhance what I'm doing, and here's the things I need to avoid and not use it in this way.
Okay. Can you give me an example of an everyday use that maybe someone like me might use ChatGPT or another company or program?
Yeah, absolutely.
For that?
So we just got off a vacation. And we actually had the wonderful opportunity to go to Iceland. And so as we're driving around Iceland, the kids would sit in the back seat and have all these questions. Where are all the boy sheep? You know, because they have the female sheep with their babies, but there are no rams. And I have no clue. So pull out ChatGPT and it explains it to us. What's the history of Iceland? It explains it to us. All right, on a day-to-day basis, when I read the scriptures, there's a lot of things I don't understand. I type in and say, this New Testament Peter thing, I don't get it. Or Isaiah, can you explain it to me? What's the historical context? So everything from very basic, simple questions to now it's dinner time. Give me 5 ideas for dinner. I've got these 3 ingredients. I need something new. I'm in a rut. Boom, here's 10 ideas. So it can do so many things just on a practical day-to-day basis, not even getting into work and how you can enhance that.
This is so interesting. These are really good examples. On a larger scale, what kind of new mindset do you wish people might start to adopt?
Yeah, number one, curiosity. So if you've never used it, open it up and try it without prejudging it and see what's possible. 2, be open to change of how you do things. So just because you did this the old way, you know, I did my math problems this way, I wrote my essays this way, that doesn't necessarily mean there isn't a better or new way. And so you come in with a curious, open mindset to say, hey, how could this enhance? Now, certainly, can students use it to cheat? Yes, I mentioned that already, but they can use it to do so much more. I now give open-ended projects to my students, and the stuff they make is absolutely amazing because they have this PhD-level assistant that they can work and co-create together. So I think those mindsets have to change from just, oh, tech is good or tech is bad,
right,
to how do we work together to make something unique and different and new?
Just pausing here for a moment. One of the things I heard David say over and over in this conversation was that AI is neither good nor bad by itself. And I couldn't quite get on board with that because of everything I've heard. But he also said to be curious, to ask productive questions, and that sounded familiar. How many times have we, on this show, found that that is a response to conflict, misunderstandings, limiting beliefs, and even anxiety that makes things better? Stay curious, delay judgment, and get more information so you can make an intentional choice instead of living with fear. So I decided to take David up on this invitation, and my whole team joined me in this. The timing was actually kind of funny. One of my producers, Becca, had come back from a doctor's appointment the morning we did this interview. And the doctor, who is a dietitian, spent the whole time talking about ChatGPT and using it to create a meal plan. Becca told us about this and we laughed about it in kind of a sad way. Like, how unfortunate that you go to a doctor and the doctor tells you, just use AI. Put that on my apocalyptic bingo card. Check. But here we were with David's invitation to at least stop demonizing something we hadn't used and didn't understand. So we decided to dive in, and the results were so mixed and fascinating. But before I take us too far off track, I asked David to tell me more about the open-ended projects he gives his students, because as a former teacher, I am fascinated with the way this changes education.
I teach accounting, and so I'll get into an accounting example. We teach them the basics of how to use it, how to do prompt engineering or some of these things. And then I say the project is you have to create something that will help you either do education or accounting better. And the students are like, wait, what?
What am I supposed to do? I know, I'm like, I'm thinking about that. What would I do?
Yeah, what would I do? And that's the new world. That's the new mindset. If I can tell you to do it, I can tell an AI to do it. So the value you add as an employee or as a human is thinking, what could I do and bring that creativity to the front? And the students created all sorts of new ways of learning things, of different ways to tutor themselves, of ways of doing questions. And in the accounting space, they came up with products. One student, his dad has a shipping company and they have to match a whole bunch of documents to make sure no one's stealing things. Mm-hmm. And he created a tool in a few minutes that automated what five people do all day, every day.
So really?
Yes, that's the power that you can unlock with AI.
All right, pausing again. What an impressive thing that a college student could use AI and with a snap of the fingers, come up with a tool that does the work of a whole team. Crazy. But to be fully transparent, when I hear stuff like that, I feel the fear coming back. Like, wait a minute, it took 5 minutes to eliminate five jobs. What about those five people? And as somebody whose whole career and livelihood, and really social life too, are based in creative pursuits, this is what gets to me. The fear that people doing art is going to become obsolete. So I asked David about that. I also kind of grilled him on a few other things that worry me about AI. And these were his answers.
Yeah, so did digital photography get rid of all of the artists? No. It opened up a whole new way of doing digital art, and it created a whole bunch of new things. Now, did some people lose their jobs? Yes. Old mediums will change and transform in creativity, in creative fields, but also in accounting. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that all jobs are suddenly going to disappear. Every job is going to change.
And every job is going to change.
Absolutely. Every single job is going to change, and you're going to be part of either not changing, and then you have to start worrying about, will you have a job? Or saying, hey, how can I use this to make my job better? Think of the three things you like least about your job and say, hey, could I have a computer do those so that I can do the things that I really like?
The darker side of AI, what are the weaknesses or the limitations that we should be aware of that inform how we use it?
Mm-hmm. So let me talk first to parents.
Yeah.
You need to be sitting down with your kids and asking them, how are you using this tool? Because as I mentioned, you can just take your teacher says, write an essay about the history of so-and-so, and I can write it in 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. That's the downside. Work helps us become better. And as much as we don't like it and we try to avoid it, it makes us better people. Struggle and that effort. So are you using AI to do it that way? And so as you sit down with your kids, say, show me how you would write this essay. And okay, I brainstorm five ideas. I pick this one. I work with this. I go research this. Then you're using AI appropriately. If you're using it just to get out of doing anything and just to skate by without any work, that's a problem. That's the first big one. Another big challenge you're going to have with AI is it does hallucinate, which means I type in something and it will make something up that sounds beautiful, but it's completely fake.
Yeah.
So there you have to be careful of how you use it and how you prompt it and ask questions. And then you always have this sort of mindset of, I can trust it, but I need to verify. Mm-hmm. And so you don't ever click, okay, done, copy, paste, let me send that off. You always review it. You have that human judgment filter to make sure this is what I want it to say.
There have been some recent studies coming out about how the use of AI is decreasing our critical thinking and reasoning skills because we're not going through the process and we're outsourcing that. And that alarms me. I'm wondering what your perspective about critical thinking is.
The general research right now that looks at across multiple studies, 51 different studies, shows it enhances learning and it enhances thinking. Now, can you use it for good or bad? Absolutely. But overall, most people are using it to better themselves, not for the evil side of things.
All right. So just to recap a little bit here, I think David makes some fair points. First of all, AI will change jobs, like it or not. That's not a sinister fact about AI. That's just a fact of life about technology. You know, the word computer used to refer to a human mathematician who computed fancy equations. Remember the movie Hidden Figures? And I was just looking this up. Before phone numbers were invented, over a million people were working as telephone switchboard operators. Even the printing press put a lot of monks out of a job. I'm not trying to make light of any of that. Just pointing out that this isn't the first time a revolutionary piece of technology dramatically changed industries or even what it means to work for the human family. And so I asked David for a few examples, professional and personal. What are some ways that we can use this to make life better?
How many of us sit in a meeting and somebody sits and takes notes? Mm-hmm. Well, they don't ever take great notes, or it's really hard to keep track of everything. You just now have an AI record that. It automatically transcribes everything, puts the to-do list, and then assigns it out so that you finish the meeting, you know exactly what to do. So that's everybody that's sitting in a meeting. Now you don't have to have the office staff, you know, furiously trying to write. You can capture everything 100%. From a personal perspective, I'll give a fun one. We did a Pioneer reenactment, mm-hmm. right, with a youth group. And so we took them out and, you know, we simulated what it would be like to be pioneers. Well, for one of the evening activities, I created an escape room. And it was a pioneer-themed escape room that you could do outside in the woods. Well, how did I do that? ChatGPT, give me an example of this. You know, I'd like three activities. I'd like one to be a puzzle. I'd like one to be physically active. And I'd like one to be something else. And it came up with ideas, and I didn't like the first two. And so then I tweaked it and I worked with it. And suddenly we had this really cool activity. And the people who were overseeing the activity said, that was so cool. Can we get a copy of it? Because they'd never seen it before. And I had the creative idea. So this is where creativity still matters, that I wanted something unique and different, but I didn't have the ability to execute. AI took my creative idea and the execution and made it possible.
I love that. That's a great example. What advice do you have for my generation, Gen X, who's just really just trying to make sense of it and is maybe like, I just remember my grandma when she was in her 90s, we got her a computer and we were like, listen, you got to email. You can email anybody you know. And she's like, you know what? I'm too old for this. I'm not going to learn anything new. I'm 90. Like, leave me alone. And I remember at the time, I was much younger and I just thought, oh, come on. You know, this is a benefit for you. Now that I get older, I think, oh, I know what she's talking about. Like, she's had to adjust to so much technology. I feel for her a little bit more. I don't want to be like that, though, too, if there's something like great, like email equivalent. What is your advice?
Yeah, so I trained my faculty right when this came out. It was brand new, and I did a presentation. It was really funny. We all walked back up to our offices, and all the more senior faculty went and checked the retirement balances, and all the young faculty went and subscribed. So it is a real thing. Oh, it's hard when, you know, life is just full of change. And where do you take a break? What is it? Is it Dr. Seuss? Try it. You'll like it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it really is that simple.
Yeah.
Open it up and try a few things. And if the first thing doesn't work, try it again. Try it again. Make a commitment. You're going to try it for the next 3 or 4 weeks. Or try it with your family. Have your kids work with you. And you'll find it's not that scary. It's not that hard. And you'll be like, wait, I can do this. We've had so much fun. AI isn't just writing. It's also songs. It's also images. Mm. And so you sit down as a family and you start saying, let's make a funny image of, we like to combine animals. So you combine an ostrich with a whale and it makes a new image of that. And we just have a great time laughing, and it creates unity and family togetherness, yeah, in the way that we use it. Or you say, hey, I want a new game. I'd like a word game and I'm really good with puzzles. Could you come up with this word game? And I would like to try bouncing words back and forth, and it will create a game for you. Or my son was called on a mission to Argentina. My Spanish, I served in Argentina, has gotten a little bit rusty. And so you can now have voice activated. And I just sat and had a conversation. Hey, refresh my Spanish skills. And we were just talking back and forth. I'll give one more. This might be a little bit too close to home. So I hope you're okay with
it. Okay, it's okay.
Can I take one?
Please.
So instead of listening to podcasts, I often now will just turn on the AI and have a conversation. And it's like having an expert podcaster on every single topic you can imagine at my fingertips, any time of the day. So you think about learning. If you have a passion, you can learn about anything you want with an expert on your phone at any time.
All right, hold up. While I knew AI was coming for my job, I did not think it was going to happen in this interview. Well, this was fun while it lasted. Had a really good time. Thank you so much for indulging me. Tell ChatGPT I say hello. Wish it well. And in case you're still listening and haven't switched over already, let me tell you that I almost cut the clip out of the episode for obvious reasons. I really don't want to put myself out of a job. I love this. I love the community of The Lisa Show. You're a part of this. You answer my little surveys and tell me what you want to talk about. And you share episodes with your friends and comment punchlines on my Instagram posts that I wish I came up with first because they're so funny. Like, this is all connection for me. And I treasure that. And hey, look, here it is again. The fear that AI, new technology, is going to replace something precious and meaningful and essential like human creativity and connection. So here's why I didn't cut that part out. And also why I decided to take David Wood up on the challenge he extended to just try it. To commit yourself to a few weeks of looking for ways to see if AI can improve your life. The point that I hear David making in several different ways is that while, yes, AI tools are powerful enough that you can use them to replace creativity and meaningful work, your child can cheat on an essay by telling AI to do it all, or you could tell AI to replicate a piece of art in the style of your favorite artist so that you don't have to pay for your own copy. Like, this is the new world we live in. It is easier to cheat and steal than ever. But that's just one way to use the tool. Your child could also ask AI to help them research sources for their essay and give them feedback on what they've written so that they do the work themselves just faster and with better resources than any generation has ever had. You could also ask AI to tutor you in watercolor, or you could dictate to AI and let it be your brush. I don't use AI to script these episodes because it's meaningful to me and my team and we write them. But sometimes when I'm recording, I trip up on a word. I know it's hard to believe. And our editors have an AI tool which can smooth over those hiccups so it sounds like I got it on the first try. It was a little creepy the first time they showed it to me, but in the end, it's actually saved me so much time. Instead of having to record 5 or 6 takes of everything and then go back to the studio anyway because of that one thing I missed, we've been able to increase the number of The Lisa Show episodes we make all together by a lot. And we got a spinoff, Council of Moms. AI took on some of the tedious workload and let me be more creative in that way. So, you ready for those results? I've been avoiding AI tools personally because of everything I've heard, some of which I still haven't reconciled. If you know, you know. There's a lot to this, but I tried it, and so did my team. My producer, Erica, asked ChatGPT to help her plan her garden. She told it the size of the plot she had, the sun conditions, the area where she lived, the cost she was trying to stay within, and that it needed to be perennial. And ChatGPT gave her a detailed layout of how to plant it with a shopping list. That was back in spring, and Erica reports that her garden looks better than ever. I asked it to help me brainstorm for a comedy routine, and I was pretty unimpressed with the results. I gave it a few more prompts and realized that what I got back was super generic, unless I was super specific to begin with. And that gave me a new perspective. Because even though it's easier to talk to an AI assistant like Gemini than it is to type in a Google search bar, there's a sort of art to coming up with the right prompt to get you what you need. You have to do quite a bit of thinking to narrow down for AI what you really want it to do. And that feels surprisingly like collaboration. I don't feel like I totally mastered this or found a meaningful way to use it in my life yet, but I also feared it less now that its limitations were so much clearer to me. Speaking of limitations, we had some weird experiences with it too. We put in a prompt about vacation planning that ended up with ChatGPT saying some harmful things about a particular religion, quoting the internet forum Reddit. Yikes. But when we responded to it, pointing out how inappropriate that is, it responded with a generous and thorough apology, followed by a walkthrough of how to submit that feedback. ChatGPT wrote up a report, a full critique of its own malfunction on our behalf to send to its developers. And despite our full confidence that using AI for anything remotely medical could only end poorly, Becca reconsidered her dietitian's advice to use ChatGPT to make a meal plan. I asked her to record this story because I want you to hear it. And for reference, if you were around last year for our episode on ADHD, Becca was our guest for that. That's going to be important. You'll see why.
After I had this appointment, that's the day of the David Wood interview. Literally, while you're in the studio with him, my phone starts blowing up. And it's my dietitian. She's sending me emails. She sends me 7 over the course of the next 4 hours. And there are 28 attachments.
Seems a little excessive.
It was a lot. I was like, what is this? And there are a bunch of infographics and PDFs and samples of breakfasts. And this is what your plate should look like.
So you're feeling a little overwhelmed.
A little bit. And it was so funny because actually this isn't the first time I've gone to a dietitian. And really what I needed was a plan. And I had sent a message ahead where it was just like, hey, I kind of have some executive function issues. I'm really hoping you can help me make a plan. But then, I mean, fast forward after the appointment, now I have 28 PDFs telling me what I should and shouldn't eat and still no plan.
And that's a lot.
It was really discouraging. I felt really sad. And then you and I talked.
Yes, we did.
And you said I should go for it. And I was like, well, if ever there was a time. So I did. And I cannot emphasize enough how much I do not trust AI. I don't trust it. So I open an incognito tab of my browser.
Yeah, you do.
I don't log in.
Basically, you're not getting my information.
No,
isn't that funny
me.
How that gives you like some sense of security?
As though they didn't already have it and they can see
and they
right
know
now.
Your computer. I know.
Privacy is an illusion.
We're not going to go down that road today. That's too much.
We can't. And so, so I said, ChatGPT, please make me a meal plan. And then at that point, because I had put it in an incognito browser and I hadn't logged in, the page refreshed and I lost everything.
Oh.
And so I was starting from scratch. I was feeling lazy, tired, frustrated. And so this time, I just dumped 28 PDFs into ChatGPT, and I said, you read it and tell me what to do.
So you gave it less instruction, but just all of the PDFs.
Yeah, I took the shortcut, and I just gave it all the information.
And?
And then it summarized everything in a really concise, neat way, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is everything we talked about. Okay, that's pretty good. All right. Great. Why don't you make me a meal plan based on all this stuff then? And don't forget the nutrient values. And then it told me, oh, I didn't see any nutrient values. And I said, aha, I gotcha, you worthless piece of garbage.
Humans will never be replaced.
You can't
do it. Nothing gets past us.
Yeah. And so just because I was feeling petty, I said, well, you missed it. It was in PDF number, blah, 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 blah. And it said, oh, you're right. Sorry, I missed that. I see that these PDFs have a lot of images. I'm going to use OCR, which stands for optical character recognition, to reanalyze these.
What?
And so then it takes like about a minute to process. And what it's doing is it's actually reading them. It's like extracting the text from these PDFs that are only full of pictures. And it spits out a table. And the table says iron, 18 milligrams, selenium, 55 micrograms. And it...
Oh, my word. It did summarize for you.
Yeah, it did.
Based on an image and not text.
Uh-huh. And...
Oh, okay.
I know. It was like, oh, I didn't realize it could do that. And I went back and I checked every single number. Because again, I do not trust it.
Right.
And I got them all right. And so I said, okay, now make me a meal plan. And I gave it some of the same instructions with a few things that I had thought up now. Like, hey, if there's anything that can wilt or spoil, like put that early in the week so that everything tastes good by the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like this little playground where every perfectionistic tangent I could think of, I could just tell the computer. And I did. And then it made me a meal plan and it looked really good.
Really?
Yeah, like it was, and they were simple things
because
I told
it,
and nothing groundbreaking in the same way that probably like I could have made my own. But the problem is that I can't make my own. Yeah. Years of trying to achieve that level of organization, I just keep failing. I mean, that's why I went to a dietitian, not to tell me that I should eat vegetables, but to help me make a plan to do it. When I don't have a plan, I just end up eating whatever is closest or whatever my impulses dictate. It's oatmeal cream pies,
double-decker oatmeal cream pies.
And I don't think you have to have ADHD to relate to this, but for me, like as a person where sometimes this is really a disability for me, it took so little time for me to suddenly become high-functioning in an area where I've always been low-functioning. and, you know, nobody was coming to help me. Obviously, I went to 2 doctors and still didn't have a plan, and now I had a plan, and it's going really well.
Oh.
I ordered the groceries, noticed that it costs way less to do this way than rather walking around the grocery store and putting everything in my cart that looks good, or a Costco-sized box of tomatoes that I don't actually have a recipe in mind for that I'm going to use. Like, it has been cheaper, I'm feeling better. This is going to change my life.
That story sticks with me. Accessibility has to be part of the conversation. There's so much more to know about AI that I couldn't fit into this episode. For example, scammers and people who monetize misinformation on social media, they all have access to this technology too, and they're hard at work. It's going to be harder than ever to know if what you see or read online is real. And in terms of the people who create and oversee AI, there are some serious environmental, privacy, and regulation concerns that I want to see some accountability for. I'm writing letters. We'll see what happens. And in the meantime, I'm grateful for this chance to quite honestly face my fears. This was super unfamiliar and uncomfortable to me, but I feel empowered by what I know now. First of all, that when my news feed sounds apocalyptic about AI, there's another side to the story. Bad people will do bad things with all the tools at their disposal. But so will good people. And as a tool, AI has the potential to improve lives, create accessibility to skills and resources, and even enable creativity. David offered this final piece of advice.
My hope from this, if you've been listening, is that you'll just be open-minded to try and learn more. And after you learn more, it may not fit you, and that's totally fine. But don't dismiss it because of what you're hearing in the media or because of Aunt Helen at Thanksgiving said something or other.
She's the worst.
Yeah, but instead, try it out and learn and create and see if it's not that something that can make your life better.
I suspect that 30 years from now, people will look at artificial intelligence the way we look at the internet now. It changes everything. There's a learning curve to using it, and also a learning curve to staying safe out there with the way other people are using it. And like the internet, the more you know and the better informed you are, the more you can protect yourself and use it as a force for good. So consider this my challenge to you. I'm always on the hunt for a new and improved nacho recipe. I would like to see the pinnacle of human technology working on that. So please try it and let me know what you find out. Between you, me, and ChatGPT, maybe this new sci-fi era also includes the next frontier in melted cheese. We deserve to know.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Becca Hurley-Lung with help from Erica Price, Blake Morse, and Kenny Mears, with post-production by Gracie Davis. Dr. David Wood is a professor in the BYU Marriott School of Business. A link to his book, Rewiring Your Mind for AI, will be in the show notes. And be sure to check out our new podcast, Proofread, a podcast to help you read more of what you love and less of what you don't, because life's too short for the wrong book. Find it anywhere you get your podcasts. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thanks for listening.
Are you looking to build better connections or bridge divides but struggle with the how? There's another podcast I think you'll love. It's called Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. It's an audio and video podcast brought to you by the BYU Radio family. Now, on Uncomfy, you'll hear stories of real people in moments that really challenged their perspective. And instead of getting angry or shutting down, they stuck with their discomfort. Whether it's getting some tough feedback from a close friend or choosing to hear out a politically opposed colleague, they chose to stay open and curious, and they're glad they did. It's very empowering. New episodes of Uncomfy drop every Wednesday. You can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.